Legendary doesn't happen by chance. It happens because it's what BetMGM does. Sign up for BetMGM and check out all the exciting new ways you can make this pro football season unforgettable. Shoot your shot with same-game parlays. Call your plays like a pro with live betting. Or bet on a market you didn't know existed thanks to BetMGM Originals. You'll be on the edge of your seat from the very first snap, no matter what type of fan you are. Earn BetMGM rewards points on every bet. Take advantage of football offers found nowhere else, like a second chance on a first touchdown bet. And keep an eye out for rewards dropping in your account throughout the season. Never settle for the ordinary. Sign up today. BetMGM. Make it legendary.
BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. Specific promotional offers are not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text OPENY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
This podcast is brought to you in part by Dragon Shield. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at the affiliate link down below for 5% off to help support the show.
Welcome to the Play to Win podcast, where we talk about winning in CEDH. I'm Cam.
And I'm Dylan. This week, we are in a new location. The location is different. Obviously, I moved. I moved over the course since last week to this week. Actually, last week's video was filmed like a month ago. But yeah, since last that you've seen us, I've moved. I'm in a different spot. This is not the final spot. There's windows behind me that are very blown out. Cam is sitting in front of a closet door. We're going to do our best.
Yeah, exactly. We're just embracing it right now. We're embracing, yeah. Because we also had to do an emergency video when you moved last time. Do you remember that?
Yeah, and I think this will be a little bit better quality than that one. That one was a Q&A. Not that Q&As aren't good quality, but we have something.
Yeah, we have something prepared for this episode at least, which is already a step above what that last one was.
We've brought in five cards we want to talk about.
Yeah, there's 10 cards that we want to talk about all together today. And these are just cards that have been on our mind that we've been either playing or have been playing against in CEDH. But they're all CEDH cards that we should talk about.
The 10 cards we're thinking about right now in CEDH.
Right now.
We've done this once before. Maybe this title will be roughly a little different. You know what I mean?
It's like the same thing.
Yeah. Do you want to go first or should I?
Is this like a type of podcast that we do? Because maybe that could alleviate my problem with trying to come up with multiple titles for podcasts that are the same thing as another podcast that we did.
Well, this is like a top 10. This is like a common thing, except it's not really a top. It's just a 10.
It is the top 10 cards that we want to talk about.
Yeah, it's the top 10 cards we want to talk
about.
But
I already used that title. So this is top 10 cards I want to talk about too.
Right now. That's the theme. That can be a fine theme.
Multiple videos titled that too, because right now changes every day.
Right now changes every day. Exactly. Yeah, you're 100% right.
Do you want to start?
Yeah, sure. I'll start because the main reason that I feel like we wanted to do this is because Deadpool recently had a secret lair, and I want to talk about Deadpool.
Oh, fuck yeah. Hell yeah.
Deadpool's been one of my favorite comic book characters in a very long time. I don't really read comics anymore, but for a long time, Deadpool was like my shit. When we talked about what our dream universes beyond situations were, Deadpool, I think, was like my number two. So when it came out, I was super stoked. And then a bunch of shit's been going on and we haven't actually talked about the card yet.
Yeah, and we had a lot of really cool speculations for what Deadpool could actually do. And like it ended up being 50 different abilities that he could possibly have. Because in reality, in the comics, Deadpool can do a lot. And I think that the card that they gave him really helps portray that quite a bit.
You're 100% right. We were trying to see how many things we can add to it. But the way that Deadpool works is he can kind of do what everyone else does. It's sort of like a Gilded Drake. Deadpool trading card, 2 black and a red for a mutant mercenary hero, and it's a 5/3. As Deadpool enters, so it's not a trigger when it enters.
It's like a clone.
As it enters, you may exchange his text box and another creature's. At the beginning of your upkeep, this is the text box that you will give away to something else. At the beginning of your upkeep, you lose 3 life, and for 3, sacrifice this creature, each player draws a card. And it's a 5/3. What the fuck is Deadpool doing? All right, so when I first saw this, I was like, this is a fun casual card. This will go in a lot of Rakdos-y casual cards. It's just like a clone, a swap effect, a Gilded Drake that can take stuff. But I think it actually does a lot of cool things in CDH, specifically in Sisay, which is a deck that I've been playing a lot recently. I don't know how good Deadpool is as a commander. I think both Rakdos, the Riot.
The Muscle is the good one. Yeah,
is it? Rakdos, the Muscle. I thought the Muscle was the original one.
Lord of Riots
is the original one, right? Or no?
No, that was Lord of Riots. The original one wasn't that like the... huge like 7 mana.
It was a
7/6.
Yeah,
that does like nothing.
Either way, you're right. That Rakdos is a great option for Rakdos, or Obnixilus is a great option. I don't think Deadpool brings anything more to the table than what those commanders does.
Unless you really want like a Gilded Drake effect in the command zone. Like there's another deck that you see a lot that you want, but just in like different colors.
It changes the whole game. It's one of those like slicer type of decks if Deadpool is in the command zone, where now everyone is a little bit more fearful to play their commanders or play out their Grand Abolishers early, because you know Deadpool at any time can just kind of take it from you, which is kind of an interesting threat and effect. But I don't think that that's actually great. I don't think that's where Deadpool shines. There is also win conditions. You can do World Gorger stuff, and if you have a Forbidden Orchard and you give your opponents all the Forbidden Orchard 1/1s, and then you swap it with Deadpool and they have a billion Deadpools, and you pass. Okay, but then Animate Dead, World Gorger, and the Forbidden Orchard, right? Like, that's three cards then. Or you could Deafening Silence and then do the same thing and draw your opponents out slowly, sorcery speed one at a time, but they're going to find, I don't know, a Besage you.
As long as they have mana up, they'll be able to do something.
Right, so that, I don't know that that's great either. I'm not saying that there is no way that you can make Deadpool a powerful commander. That's just not what I'm excited about, as we've spent like 10 minutes talking about what I don't like about the card.
But it is super powerful and to say for a lot of different reasons, a lot of it being the color combination. I feel like there's been a lot of talk over the years, but like I've heard you say, man, there's not really like a good black red legend that we can play. Like the treasure one, Kellen, was something that I feel like decks had toyed around with for a while, but I feel like this is a much better card that kind of fits a much better mold for the deck and is way better to tutor for too.
Yes, yeah, definitely. There has been recently a Rakdos legend that I've added to the deck that the name is escaping me right now.
Oh, Chainer? Chainer in the deck,
Chainer,
right?
Chainer, the one that can help grant your Bloom Tender Haste and stuff like that.
That's pretty good too.
That one's okay. And then now playing 2 4-drop Rakdos cards, that's, I'm not sure. You know, I don't know if Deadpool is long-term in Sisse, but here's what it does. Derevi is a key piece to untapping your Bloom Tender, right?
Right.
So getting the Derevi in play is a huge piece of the puzzle. If you have the Bloom Tender, you want to bring the Derevi into play to untap the Bloom Tender. If you can make enough more mana to activate again, you can find Deadpool, have the Deadpool come in as a copy of the Derevi, and then now between Deadpool and Derevi, only those two, you get another untap and you have all 5 of your colors. So now Sisse can go find whatever other win you want, basically, because between Derevi and Deadpool, you can get all 5 colors and untap your thing right away and go. I think that's pretty cool.
Deadpool having 5 power is interesting, so that when you can like end the loop and have Deadpool swap his text box with your Sisse.
Yes.
Now you have like a Sisse that has a significant amount of power. It can go find you like Chromatic Ori and you can start doing loops with that.
Yes. Like that's the second part of like why this is a good combo piece, is because you don't have to have Deadpool swap as the Derevi to get another untap. You can also have the Deadpool swap as your Sisse. So now the Sisse and Deadpool, your Deadpool, a 5/3, has Sisse's text boxes. So if you have your other legends, rather than having base power 2, now your Sisse has base power 5 and can still activate and find, like you said, the Chromatic Ori and go through any number of very easy wins from there.
And there might be times where you can even like take the text off of someone else's Kinnan too. If something happens to yours, like having options to look at the table almost like a Tali style and go, I'm going to use your cards to win and find like a cool line like that is super awesome.
Yeah, exactly. It's great for that. It does a lot. And then also your opponents knowing that you have Deadpool in your deck now means that when Sisse holds up 5 mana, your opponents have to think about that. They have to play around that, the fact that at any point, if you have enough pips, you can just activate Sisse, find the Deadpool, and swap it with their combo piece or their stacks piece or take their Dranith Magic or, you know, whatever it is. You can do anything.
Their opposition agent.
Right.
Maybe not that one.
That one doesn't work quite as well. No, that one's not good. It doesn't stop the things that Sisse hates most. If you already can't do the Sisse thing, then Deadpool, you obviously can't find the Deadpool, so that cuts off a lot of it. It still is a 4-mana sorcery speed card to play, so there are downsides. I'm not saying that it's like an all-star auto-include in Sisse forever, but I think right now, I've been seeing it in a couple of Sisse lists. I think the card seems sweet, and when I've seen it when I'm playing Sisse, it seems pretty good.
Yeah, I would certainly agree. I'm excited that it's actually a CEDH playable card.
How fucking cool.
Right? Dude. You can actually do stuff with it in this format.
I thought I would initially be annoyed at shit like that with Universes Beyond when like I'm playing with like, I'll block your SpongeBob with my Deadpool, but honestly, I don't know. I think I'm kind of over it. I think they're fun. You know what I mean? I'm having fun with the Universes Beyond shit right now. I get that it can be, it feels a little bit unmagic or something, but that's what magic is. And yeah, to me, magic has always been, like we've talked about before, shit I don't know. So it doesn't really matter. Now it's shit I do know. That's I like that. You know,
yeah,
I don't know.
I've always liked when magic doesn't take itself seriously, when like it can like kind of joke around inside of itself too. And the Universes Beyond stuff is just like adding more fuel to the fire.
Yeah.
And I would hate to see all Universes Beyond stuff suck, because I don't want them just to print sets of cards that are just like all bad.
I would rather be able to play the card than not be able to play the card, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So that's where I'm at with
that. So that's my first of five cards that I want to talk about right now. What do you got?
My first one was Gifts Ungiven.
Ooh.
Just because we skipped a week of talking about Gifts Ungiven since it got unbanned, and I thought it would be not great if we didn't talk about Gifts Ungiven, because I think that
I also put Gifts Ungiven on my list. Gifts, yeah. But that's okay, though. We can talk about the same card.
That's fine. Okay.
Yeah,
nice.
It's on both of our minds.
Nice. That means that I get to do two in a row then.
What are you thinking about Gifts Ungiven? You're trying it in TNT, right?
I am trying it in Thrasios Tinde. Yeah. And I've heard about a lot of different like piles that you can do. And the one that I think that I'm most excited about is setting up like the Devoted Druid combos with it, where you can get Devoted Druid, you can get Savine's Reclamation, Hazel's Brewmaster, and Swiffer Configuration.
Yep.
And then that way, no matter what they give you, you have a way to make infinite mana with Devoted Druid. And the most expensive way for them to give you the combo would be for them to give you Hazel's Brewmaster and Devoted Druid, so that you have to spend the full six mana on it. And that's still really good, right?
Still a win.
Yeah, it still finds you a win.
I think it's a better end step, Gifts Ungiven, and then untap, and then it makes it a lot easier to get that six mana rather than getting 10 all in one turn.
I'm not looking to do this all in one turn and like do it on the main phase. Like, most intuition that I've ever cast in my life have been on end step, because like I want to hold up interaction and then wait for the window, and if I'm just like trying to jam, that's how I guarantee that I lose the game.
Right.
So if I tap out four mana on my turn to Gifts Ungiven, that's gonna guarantee a way for me to lose the game,
unless you have Grand Abaster and a billion mana. There are situations right. When this isn't true, and it also just makes it easier to have four mana untap and then Ancient Tomb, now you have six mana, than it is to make 10 in one turn.
Exactly.
Right?
And I can go for it, and I really like the Savine Reclamation in this line instead of something else like Reanimate, which could use work.
Yeah, Eternal Witness, Reanimate, specifically because the squirrel can get the druid from the graveyard. I think it still makes it that any recursive piece works in the slot.
Yeah, and then that way, if for some reason they don't give you the squirrel, like you can get the squirrel back if you need to or something. But what I like about Savine's is that it basically means that if they're going to give you the most mana inefficient pile, they're going to give you the combo already. And Savine's just means that you got three cards off of your Gifts Ungiven instead of just two. The only thing that can go wrong for you at that point then is that they have a way to remove the food token after you've already exiled Devoted Druid, because otherwise, if they have something else, you can just use Savine's Reclamation to get back both Devoted Druid and Swiffer Configuration and just go for it again. And Reanimate doesn't let you do that.
It has a lot more use cases you could use. If you, like, for instance, if you already have a piece of the combo already and you don't need to find both pieces of it, now Savine's Reclamation can find a Grand Abolisher effect. And then now, no matter what, you have access to the Grand Abolisher effect. Whether Savine's in your hand or your graveyard, you can now set up Savine's to go get the Grand Abolisher effect, the other piece of the combo, and you can now go for a protected win. So when you draw the combo pieces, normally that might be bad for a deck that like needs to find a pile. But with, I think, Savine's Reclamation is, if you draw the pieces, you get to do it more protected.
Yeah, exactly. And all I had to do to make this really work out in the Thrasios Tinde list that I'm running is just take out Eternal Witness and just like replace it with Savine's Reclamation, right. Which is like basically the same thing, but now just way more efficient.
Right, and you didn't even need to do that. You could have just, if you really love Eternal Witness and Snap and you want to keep in that line, you can just keep that line in if you want and still play Gifts Ungiven. And the line, it still works. We personally right now think Savine's Reclamation is better. I'm doing the same changes that you made, but I don't know that we're 100% on that. Like, it could just be better that like Eternal Witness is more flexible in the combos. We had kind of talked about that E-Witness, Snap, Gaia's Cradle line. It just doesn't happen very often.
No, there's no three card combo that I put together, because every combo is basically already a three card combo, because I really need Grand Abolisher. Right? So I feel like if I need it to be a four card combo, now things are getting way too hairy.
Right, yeah. So I did the same thing. And then we also both put Intuition in TNT now because of the Savine's Reclamation. You also have an Intuition pile of Savine's Reclamation, the Mana Maker, and the Squirrel. Is it Swift reconfiguration?
It's Swift reconfiguration and devoted druid.
And devoted druid. So that,
no matter what they give you, it's probably more like 8 mana to do the combo because they probably give you Savine's Reclamation in that case.
No, they give you the devoted druid and then Savine's Reclamation is 5 from the yard. So
that's
you,
7 mana.
That's
then.
7 mana. Okay.
But if they make you Savine's Reclamation for
you
3,
you have to 3 and then 5,
and
which
then
is 8.
I have to do. Yeah. And now that lets you get something else back.
Yeah. And so that's 8 mana after you resolve the intuition. So really 11 mana?
Yeah, but like there's other things too that like it also works out well with Kitten Basalt Monolith. Like you can do the same thing with both Gifts Ungiven and Intuition like that.
Right.
So,
which Reanimate can't do. We were talking about Eternal Witness and Reanimate are other options. Reanimate can't be combined with the Intuition pile or with the Gifts pile to get Kitten Basalt if you want to do that instead.
Oops, they gave me Reanimate and I can't reanimate my Basalt Monolith.
Right?
Yeah, what are you supposed to do? Right. So that's another reason why I really like Savine's. It's now opened two more one card win conditions in Thrasios Timna, which I think the deck really needs because it doesn't have one card win conditions. You're playing this grindy mid-range game and trying to like outvalue the table to find two cards. That's how you lose the game, is not being able to find the two cards.
And I think that's where something like Timna Krom has an advantage over Timna Thrasios, where Timna Krom has the ad nauseum, the early game, oops, I have ad nauseum, or the late game, we've cast a bunch of spells this game and I have Underworld Breach, and let me just cast all those spells again, or whatever. Like TNK has that one card, I'm winning the game right now. They have Intuition. One of the pulls to that deck is Intuition.
Exactly.
So, although TNT, Timna Thrasios' Intuition pile is more mana intensive.
Way worse.
Yeah, and it's worse, you could say. It's worse. But still, I think having access to something like that will give it help.
Yeah, because by the time you're firing that off in the TNT game, it's real late, and that 8 mana, even if you have to do it all on your turn, is pretty reasonable, because you also probably have backup.
Yeah, so we'll say that my card is Intuition, rather than being Gifts. Given the card that I talked about is Intuition.
There we go. And now
which
we still have 10 cards.
And now we still have 10 cards.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I do think Intuition has been given a little bit of a boost since it's so close to Gifts Ungiven. Now, if you can find a Gifts pile, maybe you can match it with an Intuition pile. And then you have, like we said, multiple one card win cards.
Yeah. And if Intuition wasn't going to be that good before, I could understand why like these decks didn't really want it. But now, again, I feel like Gifts just changes things so much. And there's so many other decks besides just Thrasios Timna that I will constantly be surprised get to play Gifts Ungiven, because we're only going to find more packages that go super well with it.
Yeah, that's definitely true. This is just the TNT stuff, which is the stuff that we didn't really talk about when we first talked about Gifts.
Yeah.
There are tons of other, maybe Kark, maybe Storm decks, maybe stuff with Past in Flames, Yawgmoth's
Will. Derevi has been playing it. I mean, like any kind of deck that has multiples that they want to try to find.
I've seen Grixis decks running with Yawgmoth's Will, Reanimate, Underworld Breach. I don't know, there's a pile. I know there's one that's just Lion's Eye Diamond, Tutor, and that is a good Gifts Ungiven pile.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that Kess is just too slow, because Gifts would be such an incredible piece for Kess to have. And for the pilots who are still playing Kess, props to you. You got a great piece, I think, with Gifts Ungiven. But yeah, there's a lot that we can do with Gifts.
Yeah, that's true. And Intuition, too.
And Intuition, yeah. Should we move on to another card?
Let's talk about, I guess you just went then. Intuition was your next card.
Yeah, that was my next card, so then you should go. Yeah.
So now we're going to talk about a chunky card. I limited myself to only one Atali card for this show, because we just talked so much about Atali.
We just
last
talked so
week.
Much,
But I've been thinking more about cards that just get Atali out in one card, and we didn't talk about this card on the podcast last week either, but Mana Geyser finally came up in a game yesterday and actually seemed pretty good.
How much mana did it make?
It was going to make 8 mana, 5 mana to make 8 mana, but like that's a chunky.
Yeah.
Like I want more cards that I can just cast one spell and just go, that's a chunky.
Right.
and that one felt really good. And there were times in the game where it could have been better and it could have been worse, but it felt like a very mid Mana Geyser to make 8 mana right there, but that still was going to be able to make me a tally. Now, if they get countered...
I was going to say, so yeah, you said it would have made 8, but it got countered.
Yeah, exactly, but like... So would have Seething Song, which is, I guess, part of the reason why if I'm going to play any of these like temporary effects, I want to play one that is just either it works or it doesn't work, so that I don't have to put multiple resources into it.
Knowing that like the Seething Song was off, but like you still need to make 3 more mana somewhere, like that makes it, I agree, a little bit less interesting.
It's just like one piece of everything else. Yeah.
Dude, I think this is a great one. I mean, it's tap lands, right? It makes mana equal to the amount of tap lands that your opponents control.
Okay, yeah.
So 5 mana making 8 mana, that's going to happen. It's hard to really gauge this card. On turn one, it makes nothing. It's not going to be good. On turn two, maybe it'll make six.
I feel like it's more of like a later game card.
It's a turn
almost.
Three. Yeah. It's your, I don't want to say like mnemonic betrayal, but it's like your, it's your late game plan.
It, it, you know, kind not, of is you know, like a mnemonic like, betrayal.
It's like your late game strategy. This is like when the chunky has failed, and realistically, I need 10 mana because I need to cast the second chunky or whatever through a, you know, heuristic study or something like that. I think this one will be really helpful on turn three and four.
I like that too, like through heuristic study. I'm not feeding so much to try to get a Tali out. I can just like, again, cards that are just one card, say that's a chunky, are things that I want a little bit more of.
Kind of like how Jeskha's Will is very, also very helpful. Yeah. Although Jeskha's Will is incredible in the early game, Jeskha's Will is also very helpful in the late game when your opponents have drawn a bunch of cards, and then your Jeskha's Will all of a sudden makes like 10, 15 mana or something like that.
Yeah.
This card can also do that. Okay, make 20 mana with my Mana Geyser, and now I can pay for these next few heuristic studies and feel okay about it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so I'm still trying it out, but it seemed powerful, and if it's threatening enough that someone wants to counter it, I think that's also like a nod to the card too. Like
that makes sense,
in a turbo deck, if you can't do your thing because the table was scared that you were going to win the game, that's good, right? I just need protection for it, but that is the indication that it's a good card in my deck.
Early to tell for sure, you know what I mean? But yes, that's what I would say. If someone's countering it, that means that it strikes fear, you know what I mean? There are two ways of thought, though. There are some times where you think, you know, is it worth it to play this card that's a little bit less threatening, but knowing that it can get through? What's the Entomb effect?
Lively Dirge.
Yeah, so it's a 2-mana card that does nothing, or you can spend 3 mana to be an Entomb, which is kind of a bad rate. That looks kind of bad, right? But an Entomb's an Entomb. Still puts a card in your graveyard.
As long as it's not holding you back from being able to progress your game plan, and you have the time to do it, then yeah, I think that makes sense.
So yeah, so that's one line of thought. But the other line is, if this card is scary enough to get countered, then it's worth me trying to make it resolve. You know what I mean? Next turn, maybe try to... I don't know if you have any ways that you can have instants and sorceries not get countered, though. Most of your stuff is like Delighted Halfling, right?
What does Overmaster say? Like, would I have to play like Overmaster?
The next spell... Oh, it might be instant or sorcery. Now you say
which
that,
works is in that. That means that Mana Geyser can be uncounterable. But I think more realistically, I would just want to play Autumn's Veil in the deck then too.
Overmaster says the next instant or sorcery this you cast this turn can't be countered.
Yeah, but at the same time though, like okay, Mana Geyser resolves, but like, did they have another answer for Chunky then? Like,
I think Autumn's Veil and Veil of Summer are the effects that you would want to use to protect something like that.
They're a little bit better for that. But yeah, so this is just one game that this has come up so far, but it seemed really good, and it was certainly going to get me out of a jam if it did resolve, and you know, it's certainly something that will make me think about playing Autumn's Veil in the deck a little bit more.
Yeah, I think you should. Especially, I know lately you've been trying to, I don't want to say pull back the turbo, but a little bit, I feel like you've tried to make your chunkies a little bit more resilient, right? Like, you wanted to make it sure that when you do cast a Tali, you're getting a couple of Talis off of it, right?
Yeah, and not just, like, spin into kind of nothing and then, like, really stumble into myself. I feel like the deck was really good at getting Chunky out on turn two and then not being able to follow it up with much. And, like, unless I already had Treasonous Ogre and another, like, Twin Flame in my hand that like really helped me spin into some other stuff then too. But I want to be able to make sure that I can just like cast a Tali and like win the game right there and like really keep going into some other things too.
Or at least have the option to do that. Say, oh, this is, you know, the type of pod that instead of getting a turn two a Tali, this hand maybe can produce 3 Italis on turn 4. And I think that would be better. You know what I mean? There are certain pods where that would be what you want to go for.
And Mana Geyser helped me get that because it was that huge boost of mana that I needed without having to like feed Mystic Remora 8 cards with Seething Song and like a bunch of other rituals then too.
Especially if you're putting more protection, you go, well, on turn 4 I can do that triple Atali and I have the Veil of Summer, so maybe that's better than just jamming on turn 2 and getting nowhere. So I like that, the ability to pivot a little bit. Mana Geyser is great with that.
Cool. What's your next card?
My next one's going to be mana as well, kind of. Dramatic Reversal. This is a card that was once a staple of CDH. It almost defined CDH for a very long time. And then over time, as Isochron Scepter and Dramatic Reversal became much less popular, this card became much less good. We saw it much less often. When Mana Crypt and Dockside got banned, I had tried it for a moment in Rock'Sai, and it never really came up a ton. And I'll be honest with you, it hasn't come up yet either. But I've been thinking about it, and this is top 5 cards that we're thinking about right now. I think it's great in the Necropotence world. Rock'Sai, I feel like recently, that's what I'm trying to do. Turn 1, 3-mana spell, or turn 2, 3-mana spell with 2 mana available afterwards, or a 5-mana spell. But the turn 1 Necro followed up by a turn 2 win, the final fortunes and the ways to make those mana in the end step or take an extra turn have gotten a lot better. And I think with Dramatic Reversal, stuff like the obviously Mana Vault, Sol Ring, Grim Monolith, you get the extra mana from that, the extra colorless mana. With the Arcane Signets and Fellwar Stone, you can get extra pips, which can be important. But also what has been recently added to the deck is cards like the One Ring, where now if you start the game off on a turn one One Ring and you have it around for a little bit on turn three, your Dramatic Reversal can draw you three cards, four cards, and all of a sudden you spend two mana to draw seven cards. Which is very game changing in Rog'Sai. So, like, not saying that's always going to happen, but now you have an option. If you're doing Necropotence with the One Ring out, so you have both and you just drew a bunch with the Necropotence, but you just need to push a little bit further with the Dramatic Reversal and also untap all of your mana, that can be a really good tool. I'm not sure on it yet. I've seen some Rog'Sai lists that are even playing things like Voltaic Keys and stuff like that to also not only untap your mana and untap the One Ring, but even stuff like Wishclaw Talisman. Dramatic Reversal is good like this too. If you activate Wishclaw Talisman, hold priority, cast Dramatic Reversal, untap your Wishclaw, activate your Wishclaw again, that's two tutors.
Yeah, because taking the counter off is part of the cost,
right,
but giving it away is not part.
That happens as part of the resolution of the ability. You don't actually even get to decide who gets the Wishclaw until you've searched. That's another piece that's also really good. So, like, not only do you have Dramatic Reversal's ability to make mana, which is kind of what Final Fortune does. A lot of the times, Final Fortune just allows you to make a little bit more mana so that your Necropotence can actually pull you into a win, but Dramatic Reversal allows you to do it right now, and because of Born Upon the Wind and ways to do it in the end step after you've necroed for 30, rather than just sculpting a perfect 7, you have the option to use this whole 30 right now in the end step, and Dramatic Reversal helps with that a lot. So I've been thinking about it a lot more. I have a couple of flex slots in my current Rog'Sai list where I'm playing stuff like Brainstorm, where it's just like another way that I can turn a Mystical Tutor into a Born Upon the Wind in the end step. I can tutor for it, draw it, and then I can go from there. It's kind of specific. It's a lot of mana intensive. Brainstorm has been pretty bad into Orcish Bowmaster. I personally think in Rog'Sai, there's often times where you can say, hey, Bowmaster player, I have a Brainstorm here. I will cast it if you deal 3 damage to something that we both want to get rid of, and that can be a helpful tool.
You have way less creatures that you care about sticking around.
I have
around
six
too.
Creatures in the deck. Yeah. You know what I mean? But one of them is Rograk. One of them is Orcish Bowmaster. One of them is Ragavan. The good ones that I do have are pingable by Orcish Bowmaster, so the Brainstorm is a little sketchy there. I think I'm like the only Rog'Sai player that is playing Brainstorm. That's got to mean something. So although the card is insanely powerful in Legacy, I wanted to say, like, for the longest time, I didn't think they translate to CEH. I was like, maybe it does. Maybe it does. I don't think it does. I'm back. I agree back on it does. So I think that's a card that I'm taking out. But yeah, Dramatic Reversal, I don't know. I think it's good. I think
it's good. Yeah, I think it's better than playing Last Chance or Warrior's Oath, even just for the fact that you don't have to worry about getting silenced on your upkeep for your next turn that you're going to lose on. And the instant speed, I think, also is just like a way more flexible too.
Yeah, so. I think so too. Like, it allows you to play into how the deck wants to play now, which is like, I drew 30 cards, but I'm playing counterspells. I don't want to sculpt a 7 and have to get rid of the counterspells. I want to hold on to them. So I want to untap my mana now and then hold on to them and do the Born Upon the Wind.
And it's a blue card too, blue which card. Is way better than a red card. Well.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's funny.
You can put it under a Chromax and now it casts Thassa's Oracle. Way better than red cards.
There you go.
So yeah, that's Dramatic Reversal. This is not me saying Dramatic Reversal is good in CDH again. Not saying that. I'm saying that it's very interesting to me. I love seeing it in the Rog'Sai list that I've seen do well in tournaments, and I'm definitely looking to try it myself.
I think that makes a lot of sense.
What's the next card that you had to talk about?
So I played against Scion of the Ur-Dragon for the first time in 5 years yesterday.
It's got a new line.
Yeah, so it's actually super interesting. It kind of feels like a 5-color Godo deck now, because all you have to do is make Wooburg in 4 mana, maybe 11 mana sometimes.
That's so funny. It's also cheaper than Godo. It's 9 mana. Godo's 11 mana.
Yeah, exactly.
I think the new combo just like outclasses Godo.
It's the Wooburg thing that makes it a little bit tough. But there's a card, I wish I remember the name of it, a green and 3 that says make Wooburg mana, and that's your ritual.
Oh, really? What is it? What?
Yeah.
This is a card?
Yeah, I think it's from original Mirrodin block, because it was like a Sunburst card that you could do, right? Like, Sunburst was a mechanic then. I think it's from that set.
Channel the Suns.
Channel the Suns. Yeah, Channel the Suns. That just casts your Scion of the Ur-Dragon right there.
Yeah, it is exactly what you said it was. What about the new black-green dragon that makes this all possible?
Oh, okay, yeah. So Scion of the Ur-Dragon, I should say what it does. So who cares that it's a 4-4 flyer? Its ability for 2 mana lets you search your library for a dragon permanent and put it into your graveyard, and if you do, Scion of the Ur-Dragon becomes a copy of that card until end of turn. So there's this new dragon from the Commander set that's called Colossal Grave Reaver.
Which is like, it's like one of the best reanimation targets in a long time, I feel like, for Commander.
So whenever it enters or attacks, you mill three. And whenever one or more creature cards are put into your graveyard from your library, you put one of them onto the battlefield. So the way that it works is that Scion won't get the ETB trigger because it's already on the battlefield when you activate the ability. But the reason why you need Wooburg and then four mana is because you're putting two Scion activations on the stack right away.
Okay.
And what you're doing is you are first having the first activation go get Colossal Grave Reaver so that it's in your graveyard, and then Scion becomes a copy of the Colossal Grave Reaver so that when the second activation goes off and you put Hoarding Broodlord in your graveyard, your Scion that's a copy of the Colossal Grave Reaver
sees the Hoarding Broodlord go into the graveyard.
And that brings it back into play.
So now you have two. Well, you have, you have your Scion, which is a copy of the green-black one, and your Hoarding Broodlord, which gets an interest trigger.
Yeah, which now lets me go get Saw in Half, and then that way we can, like, Saw in Half the Hoarding Broodlord, put it back into the graveyard and get two more tutors, and then go, like, get Sacrifice, and then start going through these Hoarding Broodlord, you know, typical lines.
So you do need either an extra mana or an extra creature that you can tap to the Convoke for Saw in Half, because with just your two creatures, you'll need one more. But you just need another creature.
Okay, okay. So I guess technically we need 10 mana or...
10 mana or another creature.
Or another creature.
Any other creature will do. Whatever other creatures are in the deck.
To have this work out, yeah.
There's also, you can add 2 mana to it to find Dromoka as the last dragon.
Oh, I was going to get there too then. Okay, yeah. Because you still need your Scion to be seen as the other thing. But then you can get to a point then where once you need to cast the Saw in Half, the next spell that you have to cast after this, your Scion can go from being the Reaver dragon to then letting that last activated ability resolve and become Dragon Lord Dromoka, a copy of Dragon Lord Dromoka, so that your spells can't be countered.
Yeah.
And then that way, your one mana Saw in Half can like get you a reanimate and a sacrifice, so that way you can make a ton more mana with your Hoarding Broodlords and like get your Hoarding Broodlord back, and you end up being able to set up a loop with another dragon, or at least the version of the deck that I saw had another blue dragon in it from the new Kamigawa set.
The line that I'm seeing here also just involves getting Lion's Eye Diamond and getting Act and getting Underworld Breach.
Oh, and you can just like set up a win that's like that too.
Yeah, because if you saw in Huff the Broodlord, you can get Lion's Eye Diamond and Underworld Breach, and then you just go through the Underworld Breach line from there.
That seems way easier than what the line that I saw with Kairi the Swirling Sky.
Okay.
When it dies, lets you choose one, and you can return any number of non-land permanents with total mana value 6 or less to their owner's hands. Or the one that we're more interested in is the mill 6 cards and return up to 2 instants and or sorceries from your graveyard to your hand. So you can essentially keep looping Dark Ritual and Saw in Half. So you can keep Saw in Halfing like your Scion copy of Kairi, and then like just loop those cards to go through like your whole deck and make like a bunch of mana and win the game.
The Underworld Breach line also does require you to have some cards in your graveyard. So maybe I don't know, maybe it would be a good idea to have a line that doesn't require cards in your graveyard, because the Breach line, once you get the Breach and the Lion's Eye Diamond off of the Saw in Half double Hoarding Broodlord, you have to cast Saw in Half again from your graveyard with the Underworld Breach to hit the Hoarding Broodlord and get 2 more tutors, and then you should be good. But you do have to have at least like 3 or 6 cards in your graveyard to get it going.
Yeah, it might be a little bit more mana intensive, but there's definitely ways that like you can still just like get Sacrifice and reanimate, and then that way you can make a ton of mana so that you can get another Hoarding Broodlord back, and then that one can get you LED and Underworld Breach, and then like you can kind of like help fuel yourself when you just have Saw in Half in multiple ways to get Hoarding Broodlord, because you're making so much mana with like your super cool rituals and the convocability of your spells and exile too, that like it just really opens up a lot of other things you can do. I bet there's something you can do with Korvold too. It's just like help draw your deck. I don't know. There's a lot of cool stuff that you can end up doing. But it's just interesting that like I feel like for the first time in 5 years, I'm actually surprised by Scion of the Ur-Dragon, and now can kind of do something if you can make enough mana. And it's really just like that new Reaver dragon that just came out that has really allowed these lines to be viable again.
Yeah, it seems so cool. It's kind of just like Hoarding Broodlord in the command zone. It's a lot of steps to be Hoarding Broodlord in the command zone,
Basically,
your main thing.
Whereas the deck used to be like World Gorger Dragon in the command zone, and that's notoriously like way worse. I never mind losing to decks that I'm learning how to play against for the first time, so it was good to know that that, like, you don't want to just, like, use a removal spell on something else in the deck. Like, there's a time where you can interact with it while, like, the activations are on the stack. That would be the best time to remove it right there.
Yeah, remove the black-green one.
Well, no, remove Scion of the Ur-Dragon from play. Like, it's one of these commanders where, like, that's what you have to do in order to stop it.
Yeah, so with the activations on the stack, if you just kill the Scion right there, Scion will become a copy of the thing. So, like, it'll put the stuff into the graveyard, but then nothing.
Yeah, it's just entombing things, but you don't have any way to follow it up then, yeah.
But it does kind of feel like a good deck that, like, kind of like Godo. If your plan is just, like, I want to make a billion mana. That's the plan. If I make a billion mana, I can win very protected. This is a good deck for that, and this, you get to be in five colors. So you get to play Smothering Tithe and maybe Bloom Tender, Fabor Elder.
Yeah, playing Rhystic Study in your Godo deck seems wild. Seems great, yeah.
I'm interested. I'm curious to see what the Scion deck will do. Is that enough? There are other decks that are zero-card combos. Technically, Sisse is a zero-card combo, although you would need, like, so much mana, like, so much to actually do it from nothing. Sisse isn't powerful because it's a zero-card combo, and Godo isn't a popular deck. So who knows if that's enough to bring Scion to the top of the tier tables, right? But
it's something else to look out for, because if you are caught by surprise, you will lose to it.
Definitely, yeah. It's certainly an interesting new addition to the metagame, I think.
Really cool to see. Really cool to see still.
I have another card.
Yeah, take it away.
Oboro Breeze Caller.
Ooh.
Do you know what this card is? I've lost to this one a few times.
Yeah, this one is pretty wild, actually, now. Something about returning lands to untap lands. It makes no sense to me.
Okay, Oboro Breeze Caller is for a blue and a generic. You have a creature Moonfolk Wizard, which is already cool because Moonfolk are awesome.
Hell yeah.
It has flying, which is irrelevant. It's a 1/1. For 2, comma, return a land you control to its owner's hand, colon. That's all part of the cost. Untap target land. Right away, as a CDH player, when you see the text untap target land, okay, we're talking Gaia's Cradle.
Exactly.
What do we do to break that with Gaia's Cradle? Well, recently, Talon Gates of Madara.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Talon Gates has been printed, and Talon Gates has an activated ability from your hand that you can put Talon Gates right into play. I feel like I've mentioned this before, but when you activate that ability with Talon Gates from your hand, it's still in your hand. So if someone does something to respond to it and you have another 4 mana, you can do it again. It's still in your hand. It doesn't go to the stack. It's in your hand.
It's just an activation. Like, Thrasios doesn't go on the stack. Right. When you activate Thrasios, he's still in play.
It doesn't put it into the battlefield as part of the activation. That's part of the resolution the Talon Gates puts to play.
Yeah.
All that to say, you spend 2 mana to return Talon Gates to your hand.
Yeah.
To untap your Gaia's Cradle. And then if your Gaia's Cradle makes, is it 6 mana?
It would have to be 7 if you want to generate mana off
7
this.
If you want to generate mana. If your Gaia's Cradle makes 7 mana, you spend 4 of it to put the Talon Gates into play, and then you spend 2 of it to return the Talon Gates to your hand and untap the Gaia's Cradle. And now you've netted 1 mana, and you're in the same spot. You make 7 mana, and you go up to 8. You spend 4 of it to activate Talon Gates from your hand, put it into play, spend 2 more mana to have Oboro return it back to your hand in order to untap the Gaia's Cradle.
Dylan, when are you ever going to have 7 creatures in play for Gaia's Cradle to be that good?
Fucking Rogthras, which has become like one of the new best decks in CDH recently. I feel like the deck is just really good. Many years ago, there was a deck Advantage Thrasios, which was Thrasios and Bruise, which went by many things, Dawnwaker Thrasios, that just made a billion mana and did cool Thrasios things. This is the 2025 version of that deck.
For sure.
With Rograk and things like Earthcraft and things like every single way that you can imagine to get Gaia's Cradle into play as quickly as possible, the deck can pretty consistently have a bunch of little dudes in play. Gaia's Cradle can be making a ton of mana with things like the Rats of Totentos. What is
Song
it called?
Song of Totentos.
Song of Totentos.
When you say little dudes, you don't just mean like little mana dorks that I spend 1 mana on. It's like cards that are bursting out multiple small tokens.
Like
that
stuff
are
like
going
Chatterstorm.
To, yeah, that are going to make not just like Earthcraft cracked, but like also your Enduring Vitality. And some of these creature types like untap with Valley Floodcaller too. Like Song of Totentos. Like that untap. Chatterstorm. Don't squirrels get untapped? No, mice do.
No.
I bet it's mice that get untapped. Tapped with.
With the chatter?
With Valley Floodcaller.
Oh, the Valley Floodcaller. I don't think it untaps
squirrels. There's no squirrels on Bloomburrow, so
there
why
aren't?
Would it? No, there's mice instead. They do mice.
But isn't, the Brewmaster is from Bloomburrow, isn't it? Hazel's Brewmaster? There are squirrels from Bloomburrow. What is Valley Floodcaller?
What does Valley Floodcaller say?
Untap birds, frogs, otters, and rats. Yeah,
I
not
told
squirrels.
You, yeah,
you're
a
right.
Bunch
you're
of
right.
other rodents.
Bunch of other stuff.
Not mice.
Not
but
mice.
Rats.
So this combo, the reason I'm bringing up this, and this card has been, it's been in this deck for a little bit now, but the reason I'm bringing it up is because it's pretty hard to actually interact with, especially because oftentimes, by the time that this deck is going for this combo, they have a trillion mana. So you try to kill the little 1-1. In response, they'll do it again. In response, they do it again. It has that resiliency that like, it can just make a billion mana, and it's hard to interact with a deck that's just making mana. You know, they got a good point. You're going to stop the mana when this when Rock'Sai is about to win the game. You can't stop the mana, but if you don't stop the mana, by the time that you can stop the other thing, it doesn't matter. They have 50 mana. They're just going to activate Thrasios for a bunch of whole times and find the interaction or whatever. So, like, it's one of these decks like Kinnan or Sisse or Magda, I feel like, that you have to focus all of your shit on right away. But by doing that, you risk yourself to losing to the turbo player. That's definitely true.
Yeah.
But if you don't do it, the Rog Thras deck will take it in the late game. So especially it's like a weird balance.
Especially because they side into being like a really good Thrasios deck still.
Sure. So like, and when you say side into, you mean as their backup plan, they don't use a sideboard.
That's what I mean. Okay, yeah, that's what I mean. Yeah, like their backup plan is just like, oh, I have Seedborn Muse in the deck still, and I'm just like really good at drawing cards.
Here's
now
a Hullbreaker Horror, and I have these big value pieces that also like are uncounterable and can bounce spells, and they're super like mid-range Hell Kings. Like, this deck is a deck that thrives in this Rhystic Study world where no one wants to win the game. Everyone is just like trying to not die. This deck is great there, and this combo piece is great because Talon Gates is also interaction. It's also helpful against your opponents.
Like, it's something that you can do. Now, is Talon Gates ETB a may? Like, you may phase out something? Because otherwise, if you keep putting it into play, eventually you have to phase out the Breeze Caller. And
I want to say it's an
lose.
Up to one target creature phases out.
That's why it works.
You can choose zero creatures.
Which is super nice,
So this is one that I have had my eyes on. It's one that, when they Eldritch Evolution and you think that they're going for Seedborn, maybe they're going for this. Keep that in mind. That they might be not going for the thing that you think they're going for. They might just be going for this other line instead, and then your counterspell's no good by the time this is in play.
This is the kind of thing that like has made me see comments about stuff like, oh, why don't we start like thinking about playing Stifle now?
Yeah.
Because like there's so many decks that play these uninteractable win cons only because we're not stifling. But I think the reality is that you can also stop this with just having like other cards in your deck that you're already playing. Like instead of taking out a good card to replace it with Stifle, you can just like have Orcish Bowmaster ping it. Or you could just like have some other kind of removal for Sisse or Magda, just like be at the ready because it's going to be more universally better still.
Part of me wants to say stuff like Mana Drain and even stuff like Delay are great, better options than Stifle because most of the things that you want to Stifle, you can just counter the thing.
As it's on the stack. Right? Yeah, just
now,
do that.
Yeah, and then if you're thinking about Magda and Sisse and you want to like counter the activation of the tutor, that doesn't do anything. That's card disadvantage because all you do is buy yourself time. And time, it's not enough. They're going to be able to do it again. They can just activate again in another turn or right afterwards. And like, sometimes time is good. Buying yourself is time is good. But going down on cards to just buy yourself time, that's like fog or life gain effects. Like, maybe it buys you a turn, but long term, you've lost so much advantage from wasting a spell and your mana on that thing. You lose out on that mathematically, I feel like. It's just not a good rate, right?
Yeah, exactly. I'd rather have other answers at the ready that are like already in my deck. Like, I can just play Beseju, which is like probably already in my deck, which can take care of the Gaia's Cradle and is actually my next card because I've just been thinking about Gaia's Cradle a lot because not just Rog Thras has been playing it, but like there's lines in Sisse with it.
Yep.
There's lines in Derevi that use it. And I played against a deck yesterday that was a Thrasios and then the white partner, the two mana white partner that
two mana white
stuff.
Partner.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, partner.
Yeah. It's from the original Commander Master set. And like you can like blink stuff. And it was playing a lot of different cards that just like say untap a land on it. And it's like going all in on trying to abuse Gaia's Cradle and make a bunch of creatures. And I feel like there's just like way more strategies and decks that are actually trying to use Gaia's Cradle as their big mana engine to win the game. And Beseju-ing Gaia's Cradle is a line I think I want to start doing way more.
Yeah, I think also in lieu of Dockside Extortionist being gone, Gaia's Cradle I think has kind of stepped up as like your premier mana maker. Do you know what I mean? Like your premier way to get an explosive amount of mana. I want to right now make 5 mana. There are obviously other cards that do this, but Gaia's Cradle I feel like is a really great one because it converts into a win. It's already part of other stuff. It's why Underworld Breach is really good and why even though Underworld Breach is a 3-card combo with Lion's Eye Diamond and Brain Freeze, Underworld Breach helps you find the rest of the combo. Gaia's Cradle gives you the mana to help you cast the rest of the combo. So not only is it that explosive mana that we have been missing since Dockside is gone, but it's also a win condition.
Yeah, exactly.
What the fuck is his partner you're talking about?
Oh, it begins with an L, I think.
I'm taking an L right now because I don't know who you're talking about.
Oh, Livio!
Livio! Choose another creature. Its controller may exile with the counter, and then for 3 mana, untap it, return it to the battlefield. Okay, very slow flickering. Okay.
Very slow flickering.
Sure.
But still, like, was just on a lot of different ways to untap Gaia's Cradle, and still, like, a very threatening board if it wasn't for a Curse Totem that was in play.
So even though we're talking a lot about Gaia's Cradle, the card that you have brought up is Beseju because it can deal with Gaia's Cradle.
Well,
because
it's starting to make me think, like, is it worth thinking about other things that can also deal with Gaia's Cradle if so many? Like, I don't want to look for answers a lot of the time, which I think is bad, which is why I like Beseju, because it's just, like, incidentally an answer. But, like, Strip Mine is also kind of, like, low.
Too far.
That's too far.
To me, that's too far.
Right, yeah.
I've been thinking about stuff like Assassin's Trophy, whereas before I thought things like Abrupt Decay was where I wanted to be, and Abrupt Decay is still pretty good, and I could be wrong about this, but Assassin's Trophy having the flexibility to get rid of some problem things like Gaia's Cradle, like Consecrated Sphinx, like these other things that Abrupt Decay otherwise wouldn't touch, I think that's nice. The uncounterability of Abrupt Decay is hard to match, obviously, especially in this world where everyone's drawn a 20 cards from Rhystic Studies and stuff like that, but there's no way to deal with the Gaia's Cradle, and that's one of the reasons why Rogthras is so powerful, is that, like, once the Cradle's in play, it's hard to get rid of it. So I think Beseju is probably where I would go first when something thinking about Cradle, because you're already playing Beseju, probably. But Assassin's Trophy is a card that recently I've been given a second look to, you know,
like,
what I mean?
That might be something for, like, in Timna Thrasios, instead of playing Touch the Spirit Realm, like, maybe not Touch, but just, like, something else that's kind of, like, in that space.
Yeah, I have been trying Assassin's Trophy out in Sissei, because I feel like Sissei, there is a wide range of things that I want to be able to get rid of, and Abrupt Decay does get rid of most of them, but having an extra way to not die, I don't know. Maybe it's Assassin's Trophy for now. I could be proven wrong on this. I'm going to try to Assassin's Trophy Drowneth Magistrate, and they're going to force a will. I'm going to go, whoops, I wish this was fucking Abrupt Decay.
Maybe so, my real card should be Assassin's Trophy, because that's the one I really should be thinking about more, but, like, Beseju's really the effect.
Beseju's better.
Of. Yeah, Beseju's
just
better. So.
It's, like, uncounterable, and you want to play it anyway, and it's not sometimes bad. Yeah, Beseju is just better.
Between then having access to Gaia's Cradle and Beseju, it kind of makes me want to be in green more.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And I think green has been given a lot more pull recently.
Well,
I'm trying to
talk about my last card, but I've said too much now about this card. So what's your next one?
I have one more. This is my last one.
Oh, this is your last one. I have
your
one
last
more,
right?
Too. Yeah.
Okay, so this is Vexing Bauble. This is my next card. I feel like we talked about some of the cards. We've mentioned what they do. Vexing Bauble is a 1-mana artifact. Whenever a player casts a spell, if no mana was spent to cast it, counter that spell. For 1, tap, sacrifice Vexing Bauble, counter. All of that's the cost. Draw a card. We've had other things that do stuff like this before. Lavinia did something like this. The Lord of the Rings, Boromir, did something like this. Vexing Bauble is unique because it costs only 1 mana, and also, like Boromir, has a way to get it off the field when you don't want it to do anything. I've been trying this card recently in, weirdly enough, Rog'Sai, which is, at first glance, this card looks like it should be a stacks card. What I'm using it as, and what it was so powerful for in Legacy, is more as an upper protection spell. I don't want you to be able to cast Force of Will. And also, since this is my card in my deck, I get to choose when I cast it. So I can cast Rograkh first, then I cast the Vexing Bauble, then I cast the Underworld Breach. You can't use your Force of Will. And now that Underworld Breach is here, I'm going to sack the Bauble, so now I can cast the Lion's Eye Diamond, and you can counter the Lion's Eye Diamond, because I have Underworld Breach now, and I'll just get it back. You know what I mean? So, like, there are situations like that, although it can screw, I'm playing a lot of free spells in my deck. Absolutely.
Right, yeah.
But I like the idea of, I cut Swan Song for it, because I was thinking in my head, this is similar to Swan Song, except I can use Mana Vault to pay for this. Or there's the dream situation of turn 1 Vexing Bauble, no one plays any of their fast mana. Turn 2, I can present to win. That's now a little bit protected. That can happen with Rog'Sai. Those hands are there where you can present that turn to win.
Swan Song doesn't let your top deck tutors turn into Demonic Tutor either.
Right. Yes,
yeah,
there is a world.
It helps with that too.
Yeah, that this weirdly turns Imperial Seal into Grim Tutor. Like, obviously 2 mana to draw a card isn't great, but when a deck like Rog'Sai has so much concentrated power, that can be good enough. You know what I mean?
Is it 2 mana to sack? I thought you just need 1 mana to sack.
One to play, 1 to sacrifice.
I see what you
total
mean.
Total of 2 mana to do
it.
You can spread
it
out, so it makes it a little bit better than Grim Tutor or something. You know what I mean? That is an option, and it does give you the ability to, on your main phase, pay the Vexing Bauble, and then if you're doing Necro stuff, when you go to the end step, now you're Vampiric Tutor and your Mystical Tutor, like with the Brainstorm I talked about early, now those things can get you the Born Upon the Wind right away because the Vexing Bauble can find it. And now you've drawn a bunch of cards. You've already resolved the Necro. You don't need the Vexing Bauble anymore. You've drawn 30 cards. If they have a counterspell now, you hopefully have backup at this point, right?
Yeah, exactly, because you have 30 cards.
Right. So I'm hopeful. I think this card is really good. It's kind of where I want to be. I'm shaving on counterspells more and more in Rog'Sai. For me, Flusterstorm is the last remaining counterspell that I spend mana on. All the other ones are all free. You know, I have a whole bunch of Dark Rituals and Jessica's Wills. I can make 1,000 red and black mana. Blue mana is tough and hard to come by. So wasting a blue mana on a Swan Song can be tough. Now the rest of my, now you know what I mean? The other blue pip that I need is a little bit harder and stretched thin.
That does make sense. Without Dockside, it does make it way harder to find two blue pips for Thassa's Oracle already.
Yeah.
So being able to leave up a third sometimes could be impossible.
Yeah. And now there, I do want to say that this is a big card of like, if you play this card wrong, you'll lose the game. If you tap out for this card and allow somebody else to go for a protected win, you will lose the game if you do that. So you have to keep it in mind. I'm playing it right now because I'm using it right now and I want to shut off the interaction right now. I was in a Storm game the other day where an opponent of mine was playing the new Rao and he had drawn the Rhystic City player a bunch of spells. And then as a test, he slips out the Vexing Bauble. Rhystic City player doesn't do anything. They have 20 cards in their hand, but they're tapped out. So now the Rao player goes, okay, I'm just going to draw you 1,000 cards because you can't do anything anymore because you're tapped
out.
That's
so funny.
So when you have the ability to go fast, you have the ability to turn Vexing Bauble into a much better protection even against Rhystic Study where Swan Song is not great there. You know what I mean? Swan Song is not going to help you fight through 30 cards. It can stop the one.
And even if you go, you still need to hold up that one mana every turn just in case you need to be able to sacrifice it for someone else to stop a win. You were going to hold up mana for your Swan Song anyway.
Right. Yeah.
Just do the same thing.
And Rog'Sai, in the world, if everything's going right, there's not a bunch of turns. You know what I mean? You're going to have to hold up for two turns or one turn. You're going to try to win on turn two
and
or three.
And that way, it sets up a scenario where they have to use their removal and interaction on someone else so that they don't have to do it on you then either.
Right. I look at it more as a Grand Abolisher or a Silence, truly, of like, I'm playing this when I want to win the game. I'm playing this because I want to use it as protection. That's what I'm playing it for. I'm not trying to stop my opponents. I'm not trying to slow them down. That's not what Rog'Sai is trying to do. Now, if you are in a heavy stacks deck, maybe this is a great card that helps slow your opponents down. I'm not saying that it's not. It does have the ability to sacrifice. So if you need your opponent to force avoid the win condition, you can just get rid of it anytime, which is great for a stacks deck. But where I'm thinking of it is in Turbo. That's what I
like
it
there too. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Yeah.
Do you have one more card?
I have one more card.
Final
to talk
card.
About.
Let's see it.
Delny. I've been thinking about putting Timna Crown back together.
Yeah.
And what I've noticed is that this card is like running Timna Crown now to the point where like professional facebreaker is in Timna Crown. And like, I feel like everything is built around this card in that deck. And is like between that and Gifts Ungiven, like kind of really making me want to push into going into Timna. Doubling my Timna triggers seems nuts. It doubles like Ragavan. I've seen the card with Lieutenant showing up in people's lists now.
Oh, yeah. The one that makes Thopters, Hasty Thopters.
Yeah, like it doubles the amount of Thopters that you get. So you can like automatically have flying attackers with like your Timna. Like it just maximizes the amount of long-term value that you're going to get out of your creatures and your deck.
I mean, the thing that I see Delny do the most busted is in a deck like Tyler's deck and like a Karrk Timna deck where not only does Delny help the Timna, but it also helps the Karrk in your command zone, but it also helps the professional facebreaker, like you said. But all of the, there's so many things in the deck where Delny doubles up on, and it turns these otherwise borderline fair things to completely broken and unfair.
Yeah.
Like Delny with Timna, even if you connect with Timna and another creature and Delny is out, you're drawing four cards from that.
Exactly. Yeah. Because it's two separate Timna triggers that you get.
Yeah. Dude, which is an insane amount of cards just from one attack, basically.
Not only that, but like all these creatures that we have now that draw you cards when people cast spells. If their power is less than two or less than like if you just haven't pumped up your Poliwag Prodigy too much, you can be drawing two cards off of those triggers.
Sure,
your
Esper same thing.
Yeah, triggers twice. Your Ledger Shredder, just keep this card in your lands, and you'll have a double looter off every second spell that people cast.
It's so interesting because it is in some ways a three mana do nothing. Even the unblockable mainly needs other stuff for it to be like realistically relevant, and it'll be kind of relevant, but not super relevant. It's the doubling, so it needs other stuff, which is why it was a card that I was a little bit more hesitant on, but seeing as how over the top. It allows the decks who are good in it to go. It's certainly become like a main CDH card recently.
Yeah, I think as long as it works really well with your commander, it's really good to have. And then if you can build your deck around it a little bit more, I think that's where like it really starts to shine.
Yeah, and in a weird way, it also like tricks you into playing good cards. Like it tricks you into playing, not tricks you, but like it's one of these cards that it just works well with good things. It works well with cards that are already good, like small card advantage engines. That's good.
Exactly.
That's already good. Percentile is already good.
Making them twice as good is crap.
Right. Yeah. So like even though it doesn't do anything on its own, if it enhances 20 cards in your deck as well as your commander, now we're getting to the territory where it's a really great card.
It's really making me want to put Timna Krom together and really give this a try myself, because it's pretty clear now that Timna Krom is the best deck in CEDH based off how much it's winning tournaments and just like how well
it just got Gifts Ungiven again.
Yeah. Like I really love formats where blue is like so obviously the best thing you could do. Like that's why Vintage Cube was my favorite format for like such a long time.
Yeah, and that's been CDH since its conception, right? That blue has just been the best thing that you can do.
Super
and
it obviously.
Just, not only does blue continue to get the best tools, but it started with the best tools.
Yeah, exactly.
So, blue started here and then it has just continued. Other things have gotten some stuff, but blue is just has such a depth of good cards and continues to get the same amount of good cards that the other colors are getting.
Yeah, that's why I've been playing a Tali pretty much exclusively.
Yeah, obviously. That was 10 cards?
That was 10 cards,
that we talked about and that we're thinking about right now in CDH.
Exactly. So I hope you liked those cards. I hated that. I'm going to leave it in.
All right. Thanks so much for watching. If you want to support us directly, you can do so on Patreon, like our $100 patrons.
The Cardboard Cookbook, Penguin Man 0089, Eli the Magic Guy, David Newman, Pat Fires, Spengler, Demetrius Clark, Larceny Roars, Your Boy Blue, Sparky B, Zunon, Insomnia, S.E. Philip, Olin Groupie, Gecko 21, Zach Hartley, Reactive, Sean in the Ice, Gare Bear Garrett, Luke Cook, Joshua Day, Demon of Rosgrees, Peter Stewart, Cornar Wild, Uncle Butts, Kawaja Hamid, Scott Hawk, and Baby Jeebus.
If you want to pick up any of our merch, you can do that at playtowinmtg.com.
Thank you, Dragon Shield, for supporting the show. Use code PLAYTOWIN5 at our affiliate link down below for 5% off.
Follow us on social media for more content.
Thank you for watching.
See you next time.
John Coda, The Gaming Kinkajou, Dan the Man, Sarcastic, Roy Turner, Bill Bob, Mystic Muffin Man, Zachary Coulson. What does that say?
Jabaha.
Mace the Ace, Dalton Poteet, Justin, Man Solo, Jan Wild, Fang, Thomas Bueno, and David Nelson.
That allows, that says, hold on, let me find it exactly, don't get it wrong.
Yeah. I blend in with the white background.
Focus.
Listen up, football fans, you won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.